All right, everybody. This is part two. We had this is an amazing episode. It ran long because we really, really enjoyed our guest. Wanted to give him more time. He said a lot of really interesting things. He's an educator dealing with special needs people, a lot of autistic people, and he worked in the public education system in Texas and California. And I'm sure the problems that he talked about apply to everywhere, no matter what state or even country you live in. So we wanted to give him extra time. That's why we broke it up into two pieces. This is part two with very funny and talented Chuck Watkins as our guest. Also, if you are new to the podcast, this is Autastic. This is a podcast. It is a comedian's guide to autism. Neither of us are autistic. However, we do have loved ones who are. My brother is autistic. Kirk.
And my 17-year-old son's autistic.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, so we are just trying to figure it out, just like you, the listener, and ask questions and, you know, try and educate ourselves and you guys hopefully at the same time. So yeah, thanks very much for listening and enjoy part two. And yeah. That brings us to our next segment, topic du jour.
Here we go.
Very informative. He's been waiting patiently, and he's a very talented comedian, very smart guy, has worked a lot with autistic people in the education system, public education system. Please welcome very funny and talented Chuck Watkins, everybody.
Hey, welcome.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
I'm just so happy.
Flowers. What's up, guys? Thanks for having me on your delightful podcast.
Yes.
It's a grand old time.
Now, Chuck, you were, and thank you very much, first of all. But to give our audience a brief little intro to you, you worked in Texas.
Started subbing just while I started stand-up and right out of college, and I did that for 2 years, and I hated it.
Yeah.
Hated subbing.
Yeah.
The youth of America, I felt like, was not good news. But then I started going into special education classrooms, and I loved it.
Right.
And I was just overwhelmed by like the kindness and the warmth and just the overall like unique and well-rounded nature of kids with special needs. And
right.
So I decided to pursue that. And when I was like 24.
That's awesome that you found that they were just better people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And when I was 24, I got an emergency online certificate through iteachtexas.com. To teach special needs.
Stop bragging.
Yeah.
It was literally one of the easiest, like it was easier than any college course I'd ever taken. It was a lot of just like clicking through like.
So that's a problem though, if it's really easy. Like
I think it's just as easy.
Almost. Really?
Yeah, because throwing people in at like a like people who are serious about it, you'll find out, and they'll either crash and burn or they'll like dive full. Like the best experience you could get is not in any classroom, but just like where you're a student, but where you're a teacher or you're in some kind of guided program where you're apprenticing or something. Because everything I learned as an educator was hands-on, you know, and so it was a pretty quick trial period, you know, to get certified to do it. But then once I actually started teaching in the classrooms, like the learning uptick was pretty quick. So,
right.
But yeah, and I started doing that for like 2 years out in Texas. And then I moved out here to Los Angeles and got a job pretty close by to where we're recording as a kindergarten through third special needs teacher for kids with moderate to severe needs.
And now, those are tough ages too.
They've only just been through preschool for like a year, maybe two at the most. And they're still kind of like learning who they are.
Right.
And, you know, how to voice what they need or what they want and what the boundaries are. And that's what.
And do they learn? Kid, do a lot of them learn?
I would. Yeah. I mean, under my watch, they did. Like,
right.
I made it my like mission to.
Did you feel like you could, as an educator, you know, we successfully teach these kids a lot of things? Like, you felt you were making progress?
Yeah. I mean, it was at the detriment to like my mental and physical health a lot of the time. But I made sure that it happened every time. But like it would come in phases. Like
there'd be,
I had like one kind of crystal year where I was like, because the first year I came in into California and I got my own classroom. I kind of took over for another teacher who was on maternity leave, and I inherited like 6 to 7 kids from K all the way up through 5th. Okay. So like the age range I was dealing with was huge. So like every student was so individualized.
That seems like just housing for storage for these human beings.
Yeah. And so I made it my mission to not just be that, you know?
Right.
And there were, because of the varying different needs of the kids too, it was a very challenging task. But the year after that, they realized that the classroom size was too big, so they hired another teacher.
Well, that's good they realized it.
Yeah. And so they got the kind of the older kids in one, and I got the K through thirds, and I only had like four kids my first year of just doing that. And I was like, this is perfect.
That seems good.
This is perfect. Yeah. I can really act as an educator and then do all the other stuff.
Not just a babysitter.
Yeah, and do all the other stuff too, which is like the kind of bureaucratic paperwork level interfacing with like administration, you know, campus level people and parents to make sure. You're kind of like a construction site manager. You know? Lots of other agencies and people come in and you have to facilitate and make sure everything runs on time swiftly and that everybody's transparent and things like that.
And there's more than a regular classroom in terms of paperwork and...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like my whole life is just like filling out individual education plans. Plan paperwork meetings, and you have to have annual meetings or semi-annual meetings or tri-annual meetings. And then the paperwork and testing that goes involved in that. It's a largely bureaucratic and paperwork heavy endeavor.
That actually makes me feel better about it, knowing that there's that many, I guess, eyes and stops to...
Yeah, and it's coming from all kinds of different angles, like speech and therapists and occupational therapists.
It's such a delicate thing where you're like, we were talking about this a little bit off air, trying to find the balance between, we talked about No Child Left Behind, your opinion on that, and then go ahead and talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. It just created such huge problems for me.
What created such huge problems?
The Child Left Behind mandates that you teach, you know, you assess every child, you know, regardless of like their skill level. And so if that can't be done through a, you know, standard, you know, bubble fill-in test, then you have to create a lot of these tests that you do, and you have to draw them from what they call the Common Core, which is your standards for every kind of subject you're going to be doing by grade level, and there's like six or seven per subject. And so from each of those, you have to create a couple of different tests. My first year as a teacher, I created 167 different tests for all of the students in my classroom. But I worked as a co-teacher that year with a very smart woman, Miss Nancy Perkins, my mentor, who was like, Nancy, listen, this thing is coming in new. The only way to get ahead of the curve is we have to like integrate this into the actual curriculum throughout the whole school year, so we'll have time and it can be meaningful. But it just creates lots of problems.
Yeah, it's hard to know what to do though, because you're right, Graham. If you don't have, you feel comfortable having a lot of eyes there to make sure something gets done, but then at the same time, the workload on the individual teacher,
right?
You want to be able to have time to focus on helping the kids, not filling out forms.
Sure,
that's the balance, right?
I think, like on a national level, what you'll always find is that, you know, generally the school, like there's less and less money coming in for education every year, right? Just on a national level, state by state,
nationally,
doesn't make
any
whatever.
Sense to me, but yeah.
And so within that, the first cuts they always make are generally, you know, I don't want to generally, it's hard not to, but you're talking
high school
about
football.
High school football, first thing to get
That's
cut.
The first thing gets
helmets,
cut, right?
Not playing with them anymore. No, it's special education.
Yeah, of
and
course.
Then within that, within special education, like
that's just
the,
completely infuriating. We need football. Screw these human beings. Who, by the way, down the road are not going to be as self-sufficient and going to cost you tax money.
Exactly. And so within those cuts, you have like the cuts to the moderate to severe program, because it's always just like one or two classrooms. And then it always just comes down to staffing. Like you usually...
It's exactly what it is.
You just need more one-on-one interaction with the kids to ensure that they're connecting with the material or the environment on like a real cognitive level. And it's just time after time been proven that like more people around...
Yeah, because people always come to me... Sorry to cut in, jumping on you. But and talk about, oh, have you seen this new iPad program? It's always... That's great. Mm-hmm. But you know what also works good? Human beings. Like having a person that my son at least needs... He needs somebody there the whole time, basically. Somebody has to be like, okay, put your shoes on.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time to go to the bathroom. Okay.
You need humans.
I called that when the iPads came out, like all of the teachers freaked out in my district. They're like, oh my God, this is going to save like all these great programs for autism. And I was like, oh yeah, sure. And then I just kind of bided my tongue. And you know what's one thing if kids deal with autism or whatever need that they don't like whatever program's being on the thing? There's this little round button down here at the bottom that's click out of it, you know?
Yeah.
Kids are so technologically fluent, if they don't want to like engage on some screen that they can get anywhere,
they'll
just click out of it and find the thing that's more preferable to
them,
you know? It's not like, it's not a good catch-all solution.
Yeah, and I'm all for technology, but it never replaces people.
Yeah, exactly.
In special ed. It does making cars.
Without any research towards what the iPad could do, people were so quick to jump towards it and also and let that be the babysitter and cut people like yourselves and cut back funding and time. Do you feel like in California right now there is enough like funding? Is there enough room for kids with autism?
It's all, there's a lot of funding, but it's a lot of it's through private means. You know, school districts are actually paying a lot of like private agencies to have aides come into the classroom as a result of some of these IEP meetings, and those are very expensive. And a lot of the times they're not as cost efficient as it would be for a, you know, a person who works through the district to come in.
Hire just some more teachers.
Like that. Yeah. There's a lot of money being flown around, but it tends to just kind of be either slow in coming or not enough. You know, I worked in what I would like to think of as a fairly well and affluent
Well, you say where it is, right?
Within
Beverly Hills.
Yeah, it's Beverly Hills. Yeah.
Should be all right here. If it's not here, I mean, what is it like in Compton?
Like $1 million.
If there's not money in Beverly Hills, where they have
spent $1 million fighting the subway system, which they ultimately lost, you know? And then at the same time, they would say, well, we don't have the money in this particular fund to hire one more person because it's like benefits.
The subway, for listeners who don't know, subway's coming right through Beverly Hills. And so there's some talk about whether it should go under the high school at Beverly Hills. Yeah. So they're trying to, so that's what he's talking about. They're fighting the subway system
and they lost. It's gonna happen, and their whole thing was, well, it's gonna be a distraction. Meanwhile, at the school I was teaching, they're rebuilding the entire school on site, and so like their logic doesn't really hold up. I think it's always just through, you know, like the benefit of having my class like stacked to the gills with students with special needs is that it saves, you know, it creates a space for students who might otherwise have to go to a non-public school, which are very expensive, you know. So the school district would pay for that, even if a student couldn't get into a regular education program in a public setting. Mm-hmm. So by doing that, they're saving a lot of money, which I think is great. And I think there should be more kids with special needs in public schools, but you have to have the supports built in to ensure that it's meaningful time and that they're actually, you know, growing and learning and becoming more independent. You know,
my brother went to a high school, a school, and then a high school specifically for kids with disabilities.
Did he enjoy it? I mean, was it a positive experience?
Yeah, because every teacher and every kid was, there's a lot more peers there for him to hang out with.
Totally.
And all the teachers, from the gym teacher to his homeroom teacher to the janitor, knew what the deal was.
Knew what's up.
He knew what's up and was used to it and was generally trained in it. You know what I mean? So, I mean, nothing's perfect. They put a lot of he always talks about like people were mean to him. My teacher was mean to me. You know, it's a big thing.
Yeah.
He was just trying to get him to learn how to count. You know, and then in high school, they would put, it was like 50 special needs and bad kids.
Yeah.
You know, like for lack of a better word, like a lot of these bad kids were, you know, not developmentally delayed per se, but maybe had low intelligence.
Yeah, totally.
You know,
we just need a place to put this person.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah, and they were like, you know, they were like, they'd bully a lot of these kids. So, but anyway, it there's no perfect way. But my father always would be, he was like, I don't like the idea of him being in a high school with a regular high school in just the what they would call the retarded class. He doesn't want my brother to be called retarded by a bunch of high school jerks.
Well, I think it's
part
of the thing is one size doesn't fit all. So like for my son, the same thing. We tried mainstreaming, what they call it. It didn't work for him. He needed his own thing.
That's
why I moved to New York. Yeah. For that special, it was just a high school, just all special needs kid. Everybody knows what's up.
Let me ask you something. I mean, and I apologize if it's too close to home, but
what's up, buddy?
Your son is now in Sweden, and one of the main reasons for that is because they have more, better, adequate programs for your son. than in here.
Yeah,
than in California.
Couple of reasons. Yeah, his mom is part Swedish, and she really wants him there. And I gotta say, man, the I went to the school. I spent a day there at the school. It's disturbing how much funding they have over there. Disturbing in the sense when you compare it to what we fight for over here.
Right.
That this is a school that's like maybe 7,000, 8,000 square feet. So like it's like a giant house.
Mm-hmm.
There's probably, I'm just guessing, but you know, I looked around, maybe 35 kids.
Mm-hmm.
It's always one-on-one.
That's great.
So it's like there in his classroom, there's six kids, two teachers, and five aides, so mm-hmm. there's more teachers than students.
Awesome.
So like people can take breaks and they can.
That's so
yeah.
great.
Yeah.
That's so and great.
There's always somebody there who's. I guess what it gets me sometimes, people act like it's a waste of money or somehow not needed when it's like, you talk to this kid for 5 minutes. There has to be somebody there all the time. Or,
yeah.
This is a societal problem.
Yeah.
It's a huge societal problem.
This will be your problem yeah. if you don't pay for it now. You're going to pay for it later.
And it makes for better education for generalizing kids. Like if a kid with special needs is being mainstreamed yeah. or being, his needs are being taken care of in some other room.
It's going to be 20% of that teacher's time.
Yeah.
It's just mm-hmm. 35 other students. Mm-hmm. She's going to have to spend 20% of her time making sure this guy makes it to the bathroom.
Exactly.
Or, to, you know, and I'm not making fun of myself. I'm being serious. Like, somebody has to, like, be on him and be like, great, you go to the bathroom? Let's go. You're going to do this? Go do this? So it was the facilities had a music room. They had a swimming thing. They had a 1,000-foot kitchen with, like, five stoves and microwaves where they're teaching them how to cook.
That's amazing.
They have a washer and dryer thing where they're teaching them how. One of my concerns, my son, I wanted to be independent and have a job and go snow shovel, do something.
Yeah.
There's a lot of snow shoveling in Sweden. Do something and contribute. Yeah. And
in Canada, we just call it shoveling.
It's true.
Kind of shoveling. My dad never said, go snow shovel the driveway. Said, go shovel the driveway, boy.
You want to go water shovel?
Yeah.
In LA, if you go say shovel, nobody's thinking snow.
No.
But they had a kitchen.
Yeah.
They had, so they have life skills stuff, which is like... A big deal. You know,
it seems so obvious.
Yeah.
And so simple.
But one of my concerns, like, if I'm watching him, I watched him for 8 days while his mom traveled, was to go see her dad, I go to the corner store to get milk. He doesn't burn the place to the ground, literally.
Right.
He doesn't light the stove and burn the place to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to teach him how to do that. You know, another thing they were teaching him was how to light candles. Because Sweden, they have fire is like a thing. There's everywhere. There's candles everywhere. They have candles in the street. They have, I know it's like in America, you say, keep away from fire.
Yeah.
But it's really funny. They really teach them how to work with fire, which is the craziest.
That's great. You know, but what do you say to people who'd say like, well, that's the parents' job to teach them how to, you know, work the stove and all that and like learn how to do the laundromat?
Well, is it the parents' job?
Right?
Is the parents' job to teach them to read too? Because you don't teach your kid to read. Somebody in school teaches your kid to read.
Right, exactly. Yeah, good point.
What do you mean it's a parents' job? Parents... It's a parent's job in general to teach morality, like teach your kid to belong in society. But we don't teach kids. I mean, there's been apprenticeships for 1,000 years where you don't teach your kid how to be a cobbler. You send him to work with a cobbler.
Yeah.
You don't teach. I mean, unless he's working with you. That's
it's
not,
different education needs for different people.
Nobody expects a single mom to hold a job and then also teach their kid how to do stuff. No, that's why you have an education system.
Or both parents to do that. It's still too much. You can't teach them math. That's where you want to be. Homeschooled, you know, and then whatever, we'll get in that later or never, but
the smarter answer is never.
Yeah. But it sounds like, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you've made a really tough decision, but you've made the right decision. You know, it's probably hard on you, but
it's a lot of second guessing, obviously.
Of course, any man would. You know, you love your son.
Yeah.
You love your son a lot. You talk about him a lot, but it sounds like
it's great for him. It's the best case for him. I selfishly want to be involved more in his life, and I almost sighed.
Selfishly want to be involved more in your...
Well, I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, come off it.
Look at this selfish jerk over here wanting to be involved in his son's life.
He's just riding his motorcycles trying to pick up chicks all the time and trying to be involved in his son's life.
It's a sexy combination.
I don't know if he misses me as much as I miss him, but yeah.
Well, he's a teenage boy.
Exactly.
Or, you know what I mean? That's...
No, that's exactly what it is.
Probably 17. Just as much that as it is autism, you know? He definitely misses you in there. But, I mean, you're doing the right thing, bro.
I'm trying. I feel like this podcast turns into Kirk. You're doing fine.
Yeah. You tell me. You laugh at my car, exactly. And then you laugh at my life. Just tell you. You'll be fine.
You have any funny stories, Mr. Watkins?
I don't know about specific. I just my life in general, starting as a teacher and special ed, and then being a comedian, like holding down that kind of job is like nuts, though, because I'd stay up all night.
Yeah.
Do open mics and do shows. And then like one year I didn't even have a car. And so I'd like stay up and I'd like take the 5 a.m. bus all the way out to the suburbs and then take my bike off the bus. And I'd like bike 3 miles to my school so holy I could get cow. There at like 7 in the morning or whatever. Wow. So I could set up, you know, an hour and a half before school, like shower, you know, do a hobo shower in the bathroom so I didn't like stink and stuff. And then at the end of the day, you just like fall asleep on the bus on the way home and end up in like, you know, a town like 20 miles away. Like constantly. I don't know.
That's a sacrifice.
It's a very Bruce Wayne Batman kind of life if you're a creative person and you hold down that high level. Because I took it really super seriously. Like I wanted to like make an impact on these kids.
And you
lives,
did. You know? It sounds like you did.
Let's talk about this. Sorry to jump in, Graham. So if we can cut this out if it's too personal, but like you do special ed education for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Why do you quit?
I was tired of just dealing with the administration, asking for things that I wanted, you know, because I was bending over backwards. Like I built up like this program from the dirt, I felt like, to like really, and I was making progress and they just kept sticking more kids in the classroom until I was like, I told them, I was like, I need more help. And they were like, oh, yeah. And then it just never changed, you know.
Right.
And just kept getting lied to. So I was like, well, I'm just...
More football.
Yeah, I got really hurt physically.
We need new helmets.
I got just from chasing small children around and being on the carpet. I was a very physical, like, I had to, like, you know, special needs classroom, you're, like, it's a very physical classroom sometimes. You've got to, like, you know, move kids around or defend yourself or, you know, or whatever. And, you know, I got a pretty bad like thing of pus up in my knee that had to be drained.
Gross.
It was just mysterious. I never did workman's comp on it because they couldn't like figure out what it was from. I was like, I know what it's from. It's from running around chasing after small children. And then not long after that, I got a concussion from a kid just because there weren't enough hands on deck, you know. And I was like, I outlined it and they were like,
you should get one of those new football helmets they got.
Tell the truth.
Yeah.
The Will Smith thing? Is that? Yeah. But they were like, you sit down and you write a letter and then we'll go over it and then we'll talk about it, you know, and then we'll see if we can make some changes. And I was like, okay. And I spent like weeks drafting this big long letter. And it basically all is like, it's like, just provide me a little bit more, you know, staff, you know, because they do like all these kind of, this person will come in here for half the day and then another person will come in. You need people. You need to pay aides better so that they're invested in making the commitment to like do what is a very hard and unforgiving job, you know. And the pay is always so bad, so they wouldn't give me that. And I was like, well, this place is gonna fall apart if I stick around, or I'm gonna fall apart. So I left. And then, sure enough, as soon as I left, the whole thing fell apart. It was apparently a disastrous scene, but
no.
Hopefully, they're doing better now. Like I've met the new teacher, and she's very nice and stuff, but.
You have feeling better about Sweden?
If you're a parent and you've got a kid in a special needs classroom, try and, like, I would just say, like, see what you can do to first, you know, support your teacher, you know, not just like, you know, materials and stuff, but just like, what are you not getting from the administration or whatever? And what can we do as parents to
administration
make
will listen
your voice
more to the parents than they will the teacher, probably.
Yeah, you know, and unfortunately, that's often the times, you know, that's often in the case of like, who's going to yell and threaten
the
most lawsuits or something. Yeah. But like, if you can do it and find a way to do it in a positive way, and that's usually just like organizing other parents within the classroom, you know, administrations are always happy to deal with like a parent on a one-on-one level or, you know, on a campus level, you know. You'll find a lot of like assistant principals and principals are great at meeting, you know, parents' needs. But like if there's something larger going on or you're seeing something in your classroom that's not being addressed, get together with your other parents and, you know, maybe skip a line or two in terms of like the person to talk to and go up straight to the administration because they need to hear it because they don't. A lot of times they just sit in like a ivory paperwork tower, you know, make arbitrary decisions on funding instead of like really you know,
that's so helpful.
Distance creates dissonance, you know, and that's true in politics. It's true in terms of special education or any kind of education.
I think that's good advice. Yeah,
I think if more like administrative officials of any kind, assistant principals, principals, administrators, spent time in these classrooms, you know, whether they're resource rooms, whether they're severe or mild, moderate, they would have a more well-rounded picture of what it's actually like for these students and what they need and how hard it is for the educators with the funding that they're being given and the support that they're being
given. I'd love to see like an undercover boss. It wouldn't last 5 minutes.
No, he's...
You know, a school
I'm
board.
I'm just a janitor.
Yeah. Just running after these kids, two pussy knees. Oh God, we need to get more people in here. I can't.
Yeah.
Football funding cut.
let's wrap up this episode. We have a lot of people writing in, giving us really interesting and really helpful comments. Kirk was telling me off the air about one really helpful one about the way to order or to describe our autistic family members. Do you want to?
Yeah, now I'm probably going to say this wrong, but basically we had half a dozen people reach out to us and say the language that we need to use. And they nicely said, you know, maybe you haven't heard of this. I mean, that's why you're not doing it yet, but the language you need to use is person first language. So you say, I hope I'm getting this right, my son who's autistic, instead of saying my autistic son, the idea being the person is more important than the disease, which is or condition, which is,
you know what, people
first language. Jen Ship sent us a message that said that, among others. Yeah,
I generally, like, with those sort of things, I'm like, well, whatever. But that makes completely sense to me, and I agree with that, because it's a subtle thing.
Yeah,
it's a very subtle thing. Listen, if I was autistic, I would not like to be. If I had a big giant mole on my forehead or something like that, I'd be like the mole man named Graham. I'd be like, hey, I'm a person. I'm a human being, you know, and I totally get that. Not that people with autism have some disfigurement. Please don't write about that.
I was going to leave you out to hang on.
Yeah,
yeah. No comment. Please, that was Graham
please
K.
Don't,
who said that.
Please don't witch hunt me. hunt me like a witch. But anyway, I totally get that and I understand. And our bad. We will definitely fix that.
Trisha Kiram said the same thing. Very nice note. I am a speech-based therapist and appreciate a sense of humor on the topic. One question we were taught in school and use people first language. Mm-hmm. So we aren't calling people by their labels.
Thanks, and Trisha, speech therapist.
You had an interesting take on that, Chuck, off air.
I think that it's very important in special education or just in special needs in general to have like that kind of mindful language, because often a person who has special needs does not have the voice to, you
right.
know,
yes.
to make that kind of distinction. And, you know, it's one of the last kind of like vernacular taboos or, you know, accepted taboos, I feel like, to just kind of casually toss around phrases that historically have had a fairly negative context,
yes.
you know. And we do it in jest because we're comedians and we live in like a postmodern society. But, you know, it's directed at a group of people that don't always typically have the ability to, you know, voice back that maybe that's not like mm-hmm. their most preferred way of being addressed. And so that's 100%,
100%.
All. 100%. Soapbox off.
Should we wrap it up, Kirk?
Yeah, we've had a lot of great notes here. Let's see if we can get through a couple more great notes from the Twitter handler on the Twitter.
Twitter handler.
Autism with a Side of Fries, loves the podcast, talks a little about the diet topic that we talked about, the gluten-free, casein-free mm-hmm. diet, and tweet us.
Fries have no gluten.
Fries don't have any gluten. Yeah, mm-hmm. they're done right. That's right, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Grand
side of fries.
Knowledge, yeah. But yeah, that's it. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on, what are we talking about? iTunes. Subscribe. Rate. Review.
Everything.
I'm on Twitter.
Give us your Twitter handle.
Chuck Watkins, ESQ.
Chuck, that's hilarious.
Whatever.
Chuck Watkins, Esquire, everybody. Chuck Watkins, ESQ, very funny, talented comedian. Also a good man, it turns out.
Thank you very
we
much.
Learned today.
No, that's awesome, man.
I really appreciate
as a father, somebody who's given 10 years of their life to try to help people.
Well, thank you.
I'm being serious. Yeah, yeah, that's great.
I think that this is so cool that you do this. I think more discussion, the better. Like, changing attitudes, and people talk a lot about, like, raising awareness. And, you know, people can, like, raise awareness in a very fake way. But this is, like, a way that, like, has a direct connect into people's ear, mm-hmm. you know, that will hopefully change attitudes. It's not, you know, it's something very important, I think. It's good.
Hopefully. Thanks. Thank you.
Thank you, Chuck. You're doubly a good man now. I am at Graham K. Comedy. You can find Kirk at Kirk Comedy.
Kirk Smith Comedy.
Kirk Smith. I apologize, Kirk.
No problem.
I knew that. At Kirk Smith Comedy, on both on Twitter, of course. You can find us on Facebook.
Instagram.
Instagram. At same handle. It used to be Instagram K, and I wish I kept it. But
ooh.
I know. But I was told not to. So anyway, it's at Graham K. Comedy as well. You guys are the best. Thank you so much for listening. Kirk, any final statements?
No, I've got that show coming up in the LA area. We've got that show called This Is Crazy coming up in January. Keep your ears out for that. Love to have you guys come out. We've been selling out. It'd be great to have you guys come out.
I am headlining the Ottawa Yuck Yucks.
That's what's up.
Yeah, on the weekend of the 18th. So if you are in the Ottawa area, Ottawa, Ontario, come check out Yuck Yucks.
Should be plug?
Pretty super show.
I've got a live comedy album. Ooh, well, it's not live. Great. It's called Fitness Eyes, and it's a 80s dance themed. It's the ultimate workout album, and it's a comedy
awesome.
Album. And I have a live show that I do with it every month called Fitness Eyes.
That's amazing.
Come find us. Yeah, it's really fun. Great.
Definitely check that. Is there a website for the...
Yeah, Chuck Watkins, S-E-S-Q, my website. You'll find it all there.
Sounds great. Thanks very much, Chuck.
You guys are beautiful. Love you. Good night.